Today's episode of the Mighty Parenting Podcast is brought to you by Acri, the on-demand virtual writing tutor for students. And Acri has a tip today for parents. Sometimes kids have trouble finding inspiration, but inspiration can come from anywhere. So have your student scan their social media posts, their saved phone photos, things that they like, follow, or comment on are all great ways to inspire college admission essay topics. And if you want to learn more about getting help with writing those essays, visit acree.com to learn more and get a free trial. That's ecree.com.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, with a big thank you to our sponsor, Acri, for keeping the lights on here at Mighty Parenting so we can keep supporting you in your parenting journey. So today we are exploring something new. We're talking about self-expression. We're going to be looking at kind of what it really is and what it can do for our kids. Now, I found this topic really interesting because our guest, Kathy Lander Goldberg, doesn't just look at self-expression being done through art. She has a wider view of it and knows the impact it can have on our kids now and in the future. And Kathy is a parent as well as a psychotherapist, a photographer, educator, and author of the workbook Photo Explorations, A Girl's Guide to Self-Discovery Through Photography, Writing, and Drawing. She's also the photographer and curator of the Resilient Souls Project. So she is a busy woman with great insights. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us on Mighty Parenting today.
Thank you for having me, Sandy. I love what you're doing with the Mighty Parenting Podcast.
Well, thanks. I definitely enjoy it, and I so appreciate all the people who share their wisdom and their experience and their insights. And speaking of that, you know, you have some interesting insights, and you have a varied background. So I think that you have quite a perspective when it comes to viewing our youth. When you do that, when you kind of take that step back and look at our teens, tweens, 20-somethings, what is it that you're seeing out there?
Well, I see a lot of great kids doing great things. You know, we talk about what's going on in the world today. You know, the positive things, what I see are kids really getting involved in social action. And, you know, there's so many negative things we say about social media, but yet there's some really positive things too. And some of these, you know, social change movements are very incredible about what the youth are doing in our country. So that's the positive. The negative is, you know, we are seeing a lot of anxiety, a lot of perfectionism. I also am seeing a lot of just really overbooked kids. I know y'all have done some programs about why our kids are so anxious, what's going on, kids are so overbooked. And I noticed that too. I noticed, you know, instead of just having, you know, a soccer team at your community school, that now kids are playing on select soccer teams and the families are traveling every weekend and everything seems very intense. So that's another change I've noticed.
I absolutely agree with that idea. It's kind of like life accelerated. I don't know if it's as much that we've added, which certainly things have been added, but even just the kind of old standbys have become bigger, bolder, more intense, more time consuming, more pressured, I think, for our kids.
Absolutely. And the kids, many of the kids that are involved in the sports are also on, you know, National Honor Society, and, you know, they're very involved in other aspects in the community. So I think it looks great to get into colleges, but I think the day-to-day life is very stressful for the kids and for the families. And then there's also the piece about, you know, keeping their social media updated, which is another pressure added.
It is. And that's one that has come up frequently in the show. That's for sure, because everybody sees it. And I think part of the issue with that also is just that it wasn't something that was around when we parents were growing up. So we don't fully understand how they think about it, how they interact with it, how they use it. And I think that makes it a little tougher to parent and to find those lines. It can push us to go to extremes of either just throwing our hands up and ignoring it because we don't know what to do, or trying to shut it out, get rid of social media, get rid of devices. And neither one of those is really going to be, is going to work. Neither one's going to be good for our kids, because they live in a culture where this is a part of it. And it's more that matter of finding a balance and finding a way to bring that in.
Absolutely. Balance in all things. And as far as the phones now too, one of the other positive things about that is they all have really good cameras, especially for outdoors. So, you know, part of what we're going to talk about a little bit is kind of the self-portrait versus the selfie. And although we're very, you know, there's talk about being very overly focused, you know, taking 30 or 40 selfies to get the right one, the beauty of having the camera right there is also, I really think, as people are out and about in the world, they're noticing nature and in our teens and kids and young adults and all of us, you know, we're taking a walk. It is nice to be mindful of being in the moment and enjoy it, but I think there's nothing wrong with saying, wow, that's really beautiful. I want to take a photograph of that, and it speaks to me. So there's another positive with technology and our kids.
And I think that's an interesting point you just made there when you said it speaks to me. And I think maybe that is that difference. You said, you know, selfie versus self-portrait. It speaks mm-hmm. to me versus I have to push this into the world to show I'm doing something, or, you know, or I'm worthy, or whatever their feeling is around it. I have a daughter who is absolutely what you just said. She has that phone with her and she takes pictures frequently, but they're things that speak to her. They're primarily nature things. Mm-hmm. In fact, I don't know if, I think the only selfies she takes are when we shove her into one with a group of us, mm-hmm. but they're important to her and they matter to her. And she goes back and she looks at them and she does things with them. And she, I say plays with them, but I mean that in the sense of utilizing them to create other things that matter to her. And that's important.
That's great.
Is what I'm hearing from you is this, these ways of expressing ourselves, the self-expression is a very important component of life for our teens and for us, but let's focus on our kids. And maybe you can share with us a little bit more about, well, actually let's back up. Let's go back and talk about what self-expression is, how you explain that, how you define that.
Sure. I think we're all on our own journeys of developing self-expression, which is ways to build a relationship with ourselves, getting to know yourself. And I think, you know, we want to instill this in our children and teach them how to do this while having fun through the creative arts, because whether it's journaling or drawing or photography or music or dance, they know something inside of them is very woken up. Is that a way to say it?
I think
something something inside of them, there's a spark. They feel that spark, whatever it is, you know, whether it's photography, whether it's writing, whether it's painting, whether it's dance, there's a clue that I resonate with this. You know, whether it's a sunset and they click on that, or, you know, the leaves turning colors, they're noticing something and there's an impulse to take a picture or write about it. And as they keep developing this relationship with themselves, I think we're going to have healthier kids. They know themselves. They can also use these skills as a way to cope when they're feeling stressed. I'm going to go out and take a walk. You know, I'm going to draw for a while. I'm going to get out of my head and I'm just going to write some fiction. I'm going to write a poem. So the more we get to know ourselves, the healthier we are, the more we build this relationship and get to know our authentic selves, which is, you know, what all of that workbook, a lot of the assignments in the workbook are about, building a relationship with yourself, whether it's through photography, through writing, through art, or all of it, visual arts, whatever you choose.
And that idea of self-awareness, understanding yourself, we talked about that from a different angle. I believe it was episode 89 with Lisa Shoemate.
And mm-hmm. I heard that. That was great.
Yeah. And so we touched on that idea of how important self-awareness is, but you are bringing this to our kids in a different way. And in this idea of doing it through expressing ourselves through writing, photography, music, dance, whatever that is, I think that is also something that can be, it's beneficial for all of us, but I think that for our quieter kids, for people who are more introverted, who like to process inside of themselves and inside of their minds, it seems like this would be a much more comfortable way for them to gain that self-awareness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think actually for kids who may have social anxiety or possibly low self-esteem, I think that the photography is a great way. One, if you're anxious about talking to people in the world, you're just walking around with a camera, not necessarily just cell phone camera, but when you have, you know, the fancier cameras, you kind of have an authority. The kids are on your book. People you know, want their picture taken. It's a nice icebreaker to use the photography. You're kind of out connecting with people, but yet you have the safety behind the camera. So that's one piece. And I think as far as building self-esteem, you know, photography is unlike some of the other arts, because right, if I go to draw a picture of something, it may or may not look like what I want it to. It requires some talent. Whereas photography, yes, it can require talent as well, you know, learning to look at the lighting, but you can get a pretty great photograph right away, you know, and you can go and you can blow it up and you can frame it, and it feels really good to see. You know, or you can put it out there on social media and get lots of validation that way too. But I think it feels really good to know that, hey, I created this out of nothing.
Well, and that's something else that you talk about, is this idea of, do they need talent to express themselves? Do we?
Nope.
Do we need talent to nope. have self-expression?
You need to take, absolutely not. And you know, one of the things I always say, and whenever I do workshops for kids, adults, anyone, I always ask them to give themselves permission, to agree to give themselves permission to take creative risks. You know, they don't have to share it, but to go ahead and promise to me, to the group, and to themselves that they're going to go ahead and take a creative risk. And also the nice thing about digital photography, you know, when we used to take pictures back in the day of film, you know, we had to pay for the film. You can take as many pictures from as many different angles with all the different lights as you want and come up with something if you're willing to take that risk.
Yeah, and you talk about many other ways too besides photography. What are some of the other ways that we can encourage our kids to explore self-expression? Maybe they don't like photography.
Absolutely. I think journaling is a great skill. But what happens sometimes with journaling is kids, adults will say, I don't know what to write about. Or what they could do is just, they're in a bad mood, they're feeling low, they go to get the journal then to express themselves. And there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes they write themselves into a downward cycle. So I prefer kind of doing a structured writing assignment or structured journaling as a coping skill to go ahead and maybe write, this is what I'm feeling right now. This is what's going on. What do I need to tell myself? You know, which is based in cognitive therapy. What should I say to myself at this point? And then again, an action or a behavior. What do I need to do to feel better? So there's that as a coping skill. And there's nothing wrong with writing poetry when you're sad, as long as you don't get stuck into it. But I think another nice thing about journaling is you can go and reflect on it, you know, a month later. Like you said, your daughter, you know, looks back at the photographs and maybe, you know, does things with them, manipulates them. As far as writing goes, you know, you have that as a personal record. I can go back to my journals at any time and see what my life was like at that moment, what I was feeling. And I think that builds a relationship about yourself, knowing about your own personal history. And also at that time, thinking about what you want for the future. So I think journaling, poetry, songwriting, whatever it is.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second, Kathy, because back on journaling, you talked about doing structured journaling, which was really interesting. I've never been a journaling person, so I really need to understand this. So you said in structured journaling, you would write down, like, this is what I'm feeling, this is what's going on. And then the second piece is, what do I need to tell myself right now? And the third piece was about an action. Is that an action that we want to take, that we need to take, an action that could make us feel better?
And I, what I do is use this as a coping skill, you know, with others, and I encourage my clients to use this as well. What do I need to do right now to take care of myself? Do I need to go get outside, be with nature? Do I need to go just be with somebody that I love or I care about? Do I need to go pet the dog and play with the dog for a little bit? What do I need to do to get myself out of a space I'm in right now that's uncomfortable after I've expressed it? So I wouldn't necessarily call that, that is one type of structured journaling prompt. So structured journaling, writing prompts is really what I'm talking about. And Pinterest is full of them. So if you don't know what to write, there's all kinds of things that can just take you, you know, in some ways out of your head and into your feelings. And sometimes they are more cerebral and thinking about, you know, a topic per se. You know, what do I want my life to be like in 5 years? What do I, you know, what are the things, if by magic I could change the world, what are my three wishes? You know, things like that, it kind of takes you out of what you're in at the moment. And sometimes just fun to do. If you like to write, it's just fun.
It's kind of interesting. Like I said, I had not gotten into journaling, and part of it is because I didn't know anything about the idea of structured journaling, and the thought of just sitting and, yeah, like you said, not knowing what to write, or wallowing, which is what it feels like to me. Now, I do expressive. Absolutely. I'll do expressive writing, where I just grab a piece of paper, I spew out whatever's in my head, good, bad, indifferent. I don't read it. I don't look at it. I don't think about it. I tear it up or I burn it and get rid of it, which is different from the journaling piece, because what you're talking about is creating self-awareness and self-expression.
But I think that technique is actually wonderful, and I definitely encourage people to do that type of work. Because you're still going through it, you're releasing it, and you're having a relationship with yourself in the sense of it's out of your head, right? You're getting it out onto paper, whether you read it or not. You've moved through it. You checked in with yourself. This is what's going on. Instead of kind of going about your life and having all these thoughts flying around your head all day and all these intense feelings, you know, again, we want to respect our feelings. We want to feel them, but we don't want to be stuck in them, especially the more unpleasant ones, right? You know, everybody wants to feel joy. Everybody wants to feel joy. Everybody wants to feel, you know, excited, happiness, but not everybody wants to feel angry and anxious. And sad. That's part of the life experience.
Okay. Well, now we can go back forward. I interrupted you when you were listing things off. So you said we can do journaling, poetry, photography, as ways of expressing, self-expression.
Sure. Dance, theater, you know, there's all kinds of things. Songwriting is another piece of writing. There's collage, there's mass making. I mean, there's a million different ways. I think what we need to do with our kids is give them a taste of different activities. And they're either going to like it or they're not, but to just expose them. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to sign them up for a class for this and sign them up for a class for that. But sometimes just taking them to go see art, you know, taking them to experience, you know, particularly, you know, I like to take kids to go see modern art. And there's a lot of self-expression in that. And just kind of plant seeds that people do this. And I think that's a really good way to expose them to the idea of self-expression, by seeing other particularly contemporary artists doing that.
So would that be a place, if you have a kid who's kind of tied to their tech, that we can put another positive spin on it and encourage, say, self-expression through their tech? For example, you talk about drawing or something. I can't draw for anything, but I love Canva.com and going in and creating, you know, graphics, designs and things in there, or movie making, or
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just thinking that the video making is very creative, and there's a million apps to make those. So taking pictures and video, creating videos from them. There's all kinds of things through animation. I would just work on exposing our kids to so many different things and let them find their way. I think it's great if they're interested in a class, but I wanted to get my daughter into photography and getting her involved. But really, you know, she wasn't that interested in it, but she got into theater, and that was her way of self-expression. So whatever it is our kids want to do and show interest in, I respect the idea of listening to them and giving it a chance.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, you know, even just doodling or crafting, or I can't think of what they were called, or what they are called. It's the kind of the craze about crafting your own, like, day planner, and I can't think of what that.
What do they call them? Trash journals? Do you mean that?
No,
that's something going on Pinterest.
Yeah, friends of mine have done it, and I know they're all over Pinterest, and I just don't have the name for it. And I'm sure that people are out there going and shouting out the name for me. I'm sorry I'm not picking up on it telepathically, but you take a blank journal and you put in, you know, your own books I want to read and
ideas. Oh, so you're talking about bullet journals is what I think.
Bullet journals. Thank you. Yes. Exactly.
Sure.
And I know a lot of friends of mine have done those. Now, it's not my thing because the very organizing part of me gets frustrated because I can't move things once I write them in. But there's so much fun to look at. And again, I said, you know, as my friends do them, they're just, it is, it's that self-expression. If you put the journals in front of me without reading the words of, you know, their calendar or their contacts or whatever, just by the design of it, I can pretty much tell you who did which one.
Absolutely. I think the bullet journals are great because it's quick. It's, you don't have to feel like, oh, I have to, you know, compose something so special. But it's still, you know, if you're listing my favorite books or if you're listing my favorite quotes, that's another one. And quotes, just like I said, like just like the photography, a scene might speak to you, a quote, words can speak to us. And having a quote journal with sayings that we connect with is a big clue to building a relationship. Who am I? And what about this quote, you know, am I attracted to?
I really like that. And again, expanding the idea of, you said, you know, having a quote journal. And my brain popped that out into different ways that you could have a quote journal. One is you could do it in a bullet journal style. Another is to have a journal that is just quotes, one per page or whatever. But again, you could go into the tech side of it and you could create graphics for each one. You could put those into a movie. You could just have a movie that's the quotes. You can put that on your computer as a screensaver. You could take the quotes and make it into music.
What I want to say about journaling is the intimidation of this fancy journal. A lot of times people buy a very expensive, nice journal. I'm going to start this journaling and I'm going to have to do it every day. And I think that is not a great way to approach it. My suggestion is to use a spiral. And so you don't have to feel like, oh, I have to write something so important. You know, find some nice pens. You don't have to do it every day. You might set aside, okay, on Sundays, I take a few minutes and do this for myself. Or if I really feel like it, I'm going to do it on Sunday and Tuesday and maybe not for 2 more weeks, to not make so many rules and to just be flexible and use it as one way you express yourself and continue using other methods as well.
Now, is this something that could be done as a group or a family thing? Is that even possible?
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. It could be done. There's writing groups that are out there, you know, for creative expression. Sure, a family could write letters. You know, usually we have a kind of a tradition in my family that on New Year's, we kind of take a few minutes and write kind of the highs and lows of the year. And we have this nice book that's been going on for years. And so that's a way a family could use journaling.
I love that. That would be such a beautiful tradition. in my family, my husband and my two girls and I, we make our Christmas presents for each other. And
nice.
Yeah, I wish we had taken pictures of all of them and kind of put it into a book as we went. But recent years, we sat down one day and I recorded it. We just all sat and reminisced about Christmas. And so the gift ideas, you know, like what we made started popping up, because you sit down and you go, well, what did you make for Dad last year? Or what did your sister give you last year? And you can't just pull it out of memory all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we started capturing those and just writing those down. And then I've started now snapping quick pictures of the items that we still have. I mean, you know, some of them were consumable, whether it was food or candles or a piece of clothing that's worn out, those kinds of things. But the things
that we have. What a great tradition.
And it's that idea again of collecting that and being able to go back. And it's kind mm-hmm. of the expression of us as a family. Whereas, you know, you said a lot of this other work we've been talking about, you're talking about self-expression, and that's expression of just you personally as yourself. Well, now it brings in this aspect of this is who we are as a family, and it can bring in how each individual plays into that and how we're all contributing to that group and that family.
Absolutely.
So there was another thing that sparked in me. I'm still stuck on this talented thing, because when I said, you know, I'm taking pictures of these different objects, and I spend a lot of time on a computer for work, and I have to put things on social media. I participate in it, as well as, you know, reading different articles and blogs and things like that. Plus, personally, I do a lot of searching for recipes or wellness information for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And bloggers have the most amazing photos. And then I go and I take this picture of something that I think is amazing. You know, the thing that got made, it was incredible to me that our family did this, whether it's just the love in it or the skills people have learned. But I look at the picture and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so horrible. Do you have tips for us? Because our kids are going to run into that too. Whether they're drawing or writing or whatever, you know, look at it and judge what they've done. Do you have tips for us as parents on how we can help them move past that or to not fall into that judgment place?
Well, I think that was part of the giving yourself permission to create, because most of the images that are the most interesting and most beautiful, and probably the writing and other arts too, are the ones where people made a mistake. A technical mistake ends up being the coolest picture there is. All your image has to do is for you to enjoy it, you to connect with it. I don't think we have to use photography to impress other people. I mean, it is nice to have an image that other people would be like, wow. But part of using it for self-expression is, I know I like it. And so if you like it, great. But if you don't, I connect with it and it's meaningful to me. Now, that being said, if you are going to put it in your social media, I understand what you're saying. Well, first of all, I think a lot of people that are doing some of the blogging aren't necessarily always taking their own photographs. A lot of times they're coming from stock photos.
Oh, well, or when they're food bloggers, a lot of times they do that. But when you start talking to them or looking at it, they put a lot of work into that. They've learned to do it. And that's the thing is, you know, we don't want to go to that point. But I think for me, when you said, this is for you, it only needs to have meaning. If I take it, it only has to have meaning for me. It only needs to bring me joy. No one else has to understand it. No one else has to like it. And that makes a lot of sense to me, because everything's personal anyway.
Absolutely.
Even if I do think that I have written the most amazing piece of poetry or drawn the perfect picture, it doesn't mean it's going to resonate with anybody else. And Picasso's amazing. I'm sorry. I don't mean to offend anybody, but I don't get it. It does not bring me joy. It actually creates stress in me. It's like, so to me, it's chaotic and disordered, and I have to have a certain amount of order to feel calm. So that's so personal, and I like that, and I think that as a mom, that's something I can talk to my kid about, is well, how did this, you know, what did this mean for you? Why did you do this? Why did you create this? And how does it make you feel? And if their feelings are coming out about, you know, that it's ugly, then taking that conversation to, well, what makes you say that? Because chances are what they're doing then is imposing other people, what they think other people will judge it as. They're imposing that upon their work.
Absolutely. And I think all photographs, you know, don't have to be something beautiful. In fact, I think with our young people, a lot of times you'll notice they're photographing something that makes them angry. You know, they might be like photographing bulldozers, you know, knocking down a field of trees because it's evoking an emotion in them. So I don't think we have to just limit it to, you know, joy or positive emotions, but I think it's great to know that some, you know, other things might make you mad, you know, maybe driving through poverty and feeling a sadness about that. So we don't always know when we're taking the picture what the emotion is, but we know there's like a calling inside of us that I need to take a picture. I want to take a picture of this. And then going back later, and sometimes looking at your kids' pictures, if they'll let you, that's a great way to get into their world.
It really is. The pictures, the thing, my daughter, she does photographs and she writes poetry. And she went through a time where she was struggling and dealing with depression and anxiety and things. And it is very interesting to see the difference in her work before, during, and after that time period. And it isn't, it's interesting because I think if somebody else read her work, they would have pegged an issue when she wasn't having an issue because of some of the topics she wrote about. But it wasn't so much the what she was writing about, it was the way it was written, or the photographs were the viewpoint she held when she took them.
And I think one thing to remember is we can't assume, you know, when we look at someone else's work, what their intention or what their feelings are. But it certainly can bring up a dialogue. Wow, I get a really sad feeling from this, or, you know, wow, this is really creepy. And so that might open a conversation up.
And again, because this is self-expression, it is, to me, great to do what we call mighty parenting conversations, which are those conversations that encourage our kids to open up and build relationship. And so in that case, I might even skip the what it makes me feel like and just ask my child, wow, what were you feeling when you took this? How does it make you feel now? Is it still the same? You know, like you were talking about, Kathy, the idea of if they took pictures of a bulldozer and I ask them, you know, how does it make them feel? And if they go, well, I don't know, say, and you know, they're passionate about the environment, then you can prompt and go, was it that it made you angry or frustrated? Were you thinking about the building going on? But trying not to do too much of that. I noticed myself even there leading when I didn't get an answer right away, but asking the questions about what they thought, what they were feeling. And then that can also lead to the conversation of, have you thought about doing anything about that?
Absolutely.
And that too, you mentioned, I remember earlier in the conversation, this one, you know, a lot of kids are taking social activism or just taking a stand, doing things. But also you talked about this idea of, you know, looking at the future, this using art for self-expression, using journaling and crafting and all these things to create self-expression, to create self-awareness, also gets us thinking about our future, whether that's the very near future of tomorrow, next week, or down years down the road. And again, opening these conversations, we can kind of help our kids start looking at, well, yeah, who am I? What is really important to me? And how do I want that to impact my life? And how do I want my life to impact that? And I love this because the movies, the pictures, the writing. These are very tangible things. And you also said, if your child lets you read them, don't read or look. Don't just go do that on your own. We have to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we've talked about this idea of self-awareness, and you, I know, are very passionate about helping people learn to get in touch with what you would call their authentic or real self. I'm kind of curious, you know, why that's such a passion for you.
Well, I have worked with adolescents my whole life, and I was one. So we all know that I think we're kind of going through life, and a lot of things are changing, and we're not quite sure why, and we might not be self-aware. I think helping adolescents, and all of us, you know, we're all works in progress, have a relationship with themselves, know who they are, is a protective factor. You know, I think when you're going through middle school, high school years, knowing who you are and feeling okay with that, knowing the types of things that you will do and the types of things you won't do that goes with your values, I think that is a protective factor for peer pressure. So I think that's really important. If we can kind of go back in time, you asked me at the very beginning, kind of how did I get started in doing this? So many, many years ago, I actually started, I was a professional photographer, and I wanted to do some volunteer work. So I started working with adolescents, just teaching photography, and really noticed the connection. I was working with adolescent girls at the time, and really noticed how using the camera for self-portraits and through, you know, just for them photographing these things, something lit up in them. And so I started researching it more. This was back in the late 1980s. Then I went to go teach with at-risk teenagers, and using some of these journaling and photography, I ended up teaching at a school that really also used the arts, the visual arts in other ways, painting and drawing, to build self-esteem. So all of these were really, a lot of the kids were really creative kids, but maybe didn't do well in a traditional school. And they'd had a variety of mental health and social academic problems, which is why they were at the school. And one of the things I noticed was one day, a teenage girl, brought up something about regrets, and she was maybe like 16, and really regretting that she had made some decisions in her past, and she wished she hadn't. You know, she actually was talking about, she was like 16 and saying, "Boy, I really would have liked to wait to lose my virginity." And I'm thinking, okay, she was 16, like kind of saying like a wise old soul. And I thought, wow, I wish she could talk to other teens and have a voice, and they're certainly going to be more likely to listen to her than to adults. So that kind of planted a seed. If we could give a forum for teenagers to talk to other teenagers about a variety of things, getting into drugs, getting into trouble in other ways, getting over depression, getting over a breakup, that would, one, give the writer a voice and a forum to share their wisdom, and it would give the viewer a way to hear it in the words of an adolescent. So, and that is when I started the Resilient Souls project that you had talked about earlier. And so that was actually, back in the early 90s, and it was about giving girls a voice and have them writing personal narratives about something in their life that they felt they had overcome. So that is kind of how it became even more of a focus in my life. And I went and did the portraits of these young women. So this skill is for guys as well as girls. It just so happened I was working with adolescent girls at the time. So that's how the Resilient Souls Project came to be. And they had a voice. And so giving young people a voice, giving them forums to express themselves and to share their beliefs and wisdom, that kind of ignited it for me to say, wow, it was good for them and it was good for the viewer. So that's kind of how I went into that. And building resilience, I think just telling your story and talking about how you have overcome things in your life is another way to build both resilience and to this relationship with yourself.
It absolutely does. In fact, one of the training programs that I went for trauma training is after a traumatic event, as you're speaking to someone, one of the things you do is you ask them, when did you know you survived this? Mm-hmm. And they start telling their story. And physiologically, biologically, things shift inside of us. So what you did is absolutely going to help build that resilience and help the girls. And then you expanded that by creating your photo explorations workbook. I love this, Photo Explorations, A Girl's Guide to Self-Discovery Through Photography, Writing, and Drawing. And again, as you said, you happen to be working with adolescent girls, but this can be done for anybody. And with this idea of, you know, getting to know your true self, you have an exercise in here in chapter 9, The Real Me, you know, who is me? And you talk about the different roles we play in our life. And it got me thinking, well, one, I'd like you to talk just a little about, you know, how the fact that we do play different roles, how that plays into our life, what that's like. So could you expand on that for us a little bit?
Sure. So we're all going through, you know, our lives, and we all have different personas, right? So when you're showing up at your job, you're going to behave in a certain way. And when you're with your parents, you're going to be a certain way. And when you're with your friends, you're going to be a certain way. You're portraying different parts of yourself. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not all parts of you, but there's a time when you feel the most yourself, the most authentic. And the portrait, you know, in the book, we show a girl who's kind of running outside, just, she's not looking at the camera. She's just, you know, enjoying being in nature and playing. And so that might be a time that she feels like her authentic self. Somebody else might feel like, you know, being in their bedroom with their book, you know, kind of under the covers with their dog laying on their lap. That might be the authentic self. And they feel the real them at that point. The individual feels like she's really herself and most comfortable. And some people in her life might know her like this and some people might not. So in the workbook, I ask how do your friends see you, right? And I had to take a picture of how their friends see them. How do they believe their friends see them? And when I say take a picture, it could be, you know, it doesn't mean you have to take a selfie. It could be in the mirror. It could be have someone else hold the camera or to draw the picture too. Like how, and then to reflect in these structured writing prompts that go with the photograph, how do I want them to see me? Is this how I want them to see me? Would I like something to change about it? So to really reflect on the different parts of me. And sometimes it means, do I want more authenticity? Do I want to feel more myself and more real with my friends? Am I faking it to be the person that I think they want me to be? Am I always acting with the life of the party when really I don't feel that way? Am I, you know, feeling like I have to put a lot of makeup on and dress up, even though I'm more comfortable, you know, without makeup, things like that.
Yeah, I loved your questions in there and this idea of exploring, okay, yes, when do I feel most like myself? And also that follow-up of when, who am I with? You know, who can I be my authentic self with? If I'm not, why not? Kind of going into that. And again, I see these conversations happening with our kids where we can explore, well, if you can't be your authentic self with someone, you know, does that relationship need work? Is that someone that you shouldn't be in relationship with? You know, if it's your parents, I'd want to know if my child feels like they can't be their authentic self. And on the flip side, we can also be doing these exercises. And that's another way to open that conversation, is to go in and say, you know, I was doing this exercise and I discovered that I'm not my authentic self in certain places.
Absolutely. I think that's okay some of the time, right? Because you're not going to show, especially if you have younger kids, you're not going to always be the same with your kids as you are going to be when you're with your adult friends. So I think that's part of just being human, right? We all have this kind of different side to us, but if you're always a certain way and you're never showing kind of what's behind the curtain, I think is kind of when we may want to start to question that.
Yeah. And it's a matter of, you know, part of that introspection, I think, is when you say, well, why am I not my authentic self? It could be, well, I'm going to work or I'm going to school. There's a certain dress code. There's a certain way you behave. I'm not going to let everything hang out at work. That's not appropriate.
Absolutely.
Nor would it be healthy for me to do that.
Absolutely.
So that's why I like that follow-up in those questions is you go through that. I just found it very interesting. And the workbook being a great place for us, for our kids, for anybody to go through and gain more self-awareness. The questions in there really got me thinking, and I found it very helpful. So I appreciated that. As always, we will have links in the show notes from today. So we'll have links for the Resilient Souls Project, for the workbook. But Kathy, if someone wanted to find you, what's your website?
It is www.clgphoto.com. And on there are links to the entire Resilient Souls exhibit. So you can see stories, these original young people from the 1990s that wrote about overcoming something in their lives. And then I went and followed up 20 years later. So now you see them in middle age in their writing reflecting it. So it's free, click on, it's an online gallery. And I think you would see a lot of stories of hope and resilience and difficulties in life, but people still, you know, not being perfect, but getting through life with hard times. And that's what we all have. So I hope people will find inspiration.
And that's another piece of the message is we're not alone out here. Nobody's alone. Everybody's dealing. So I'm just going to do a real quick recap. And starting out, we said, you know, self-expression is a way to build a relationship with ourselves. And we don't need to have talent to experience self-expression. There are many, many ways we can do it. We can do it with journaling, dance, theater, songwriting, photography, crafting, movie making. You can do it freehand. You can do it with tech tools. You can do it with instruments. You can do whatever you feel a spark in. I found interesting insight. Having a quote journal is a great way to get insights into who you are and what resonates with you. And you can do this. Anyone can do this alone, but you can also set up some times to maybe try it as a family and see how you come together as a family and how everyone is part of that. If our child gives us permission, then we can take a look at their work, and that can be a great springboard for making meaningful conversations. And helping adolescents have a relationship with themselves and knowing who they are is a protective factor for peer pressure. Knowing who they are means they can know what they will do, what they won't do. If something pops up, they have kind of a measuring stick to go by to go, is this right for me? And we live our life with different personas. They're all part of us, but there's a time when we feel the most like ourselves. And understanding that, finding your authentic self, can be a very, very powerful tool. Well, thank you again, Kathy, for being here. Thank you, Mighty Parents, for joining us. Remember to share the show and also pop on over to mightyparenting.com to get your free email series on communicating with your teen, as well as to see what other support we have for you and what tips the sponsors have. Remember,
thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome, Kathy. And remember, if you're here, you are a mighty parent. And I will see you next week.